This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We've got to stop them! They're going to kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rick, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Testing. No, I'm trying to get it to work right. Is it still going? The other one still going? Is the show still going? But you're hearing something. Okay. Well, hello, everyone. This is Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Sorry to be a little bit late starting up tonight. But we had a little glitch connecting to the studio, but I believe we are all set now. Hopefully we are. And I'm going to pull in my first guest of the evening, Abba Bird. Abba joins me each month in this first week, and she's going to be joining us right now. I believe she's back in California. Hello, Abba. And again, it didn't quite work yet, so we'll keep trying. All right. Well, let's try this again. Okay. Well, bear with me, folks. We're going to get Abba Bird on here momentarily. I don't know if the show's going out or not. Sorry, folks, we're still having trouble, and I'm actually not sure if we're working right yet, but I hope that this is going out, and I hope to get hold of Abba Bird real soon. All right, so we're still trying to get Abba Bird on here, and so far we're just not having any luck with this tonight. All right, so what I'm going to do to get things started. Hang on, she is waiting. Okay, Abba's giving me a different number to try, so we're going to try that method and see if that works better. So here we go. Abba is a poet who joins me in this first week of every month. Okay, we have this number now. We're going to give it a try. Okay. Hello. All right. We got you on one of these.
Actually, 0, looks like 2, got you 5, twice. 7, yeah. 5, 9, 9, 9, 4 what? Is not available. The mailbox is full and okay. Cannot accept any messages at this time. Goodbye.
Okay, well, one of those didn't work. Let's try this again. The joys of live radio, you know? Okay. Okay, so this one should work. Okay. Abba, are you there? Okay, good. I went from not having you at all to having you on two different calls so that we'd have an echo. Then not to having you at all again. Well, it's just, you know, it's been fun technically. So how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Chuck?
Oh, doing quite well. Thank you. Thank you.
Good, good. Well, happy summer.
Well, thank you.
Happy Lionsgate. We've got Lionsgate coming up with.
Lionsgate? Yeah. Now, what's Lionsgate? You mentioned something like that, about that earlier, and I didn't know what you meant.
Well, it's basically like the Leo holiday, the Lionsgate of opening up the lion energies, and it's interesting, but it's, you know, for me, it's powerful because I myself am a Leo, so I'm, you know, out here celebrating at least sunshine and summer, and that we still have. We still have a world and a country, and we're still breathing, and, you know, we haven't, you know, the walls around us haven't collapsed yet, so we keep going and keep living in it. Summertime, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, right. Well,
so,
okay.
But, yeah, so how are you doing, Chuck, these days?
Well, we are sort of settled now into our new apartment, and you know, it's starting to look better. I'm you know, pretty happy with the way it's coming along, and you know, the things are going well at church. The this Sunday will be the our new guy's, you know, first Sunday to do the preaching and all that, so that's going to be good. Sunday evening, the band that I sing with is going to be playing a benefit concert, a pool party for Ukraine. So that's something. And then I'm getting myself geared up for what I do every September, which is the Great Cycle Challenge. What I've challenged myself to do this year is, so far, it is the same as what I actually managed to do last year, which was ride 300 miles and collect $500 for the cause of preventing children's cancer, or doing, you know, researching children's cancer. So this will be the third year I've ridden in that.
You're a good man, Chuck. You're a good man.
I
well,
try.
Good work to do.
I keep busy.
Good work.
Yeah. How are things with you, Baba? What's going on there?
Well, I got a new book coming out really soon. It's almost ready. We've been working on it, so be ready for blast off pretty soon. And hope people will order it and support poetry and support the work it takes to put together a book of poems about the world we're living in.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a couple pieces that later on in a bit I can share one or, you know, a couple from the book. I didn't
that
think that
good.
I had them with me, but I was able to, I mean, like.
Uh-huh. Yeah, actually, why don't you go ahead into those pretty quick, since, you know, all the technical stuff made us late getting started, so there isn't quite as much time as we thought. So,
okay.
Yeah, what you got?
Were you trying to call me and it wasn't going through? Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what was happening, yeah.
it's so weird, you know, but anyway.
Yeah.
I was waiting, but
not available, not available.
Yeah, I'm in an area where there's a lot of interference and 5G and in the middle of a big, you know, city cesspool of frequencies, and, you know, just didn't go through. So, but I'm glad we were able to reach each other on.
Me too.
Another way. And, but, you know, something that I've been on my mind, have been talking to people about this is, you know, the issue of vaccination, and are people allowed to discriminate against you based on your vaccine status? Are they allowed to refuse entry to you because of your medical? It's basically refusing somebody based on a disability or the color of their skin, or you know, it's a form of discrimination. And many people were treated that way during this whole nonsense thing. And
you know, that's actually nothing new. I mean, you remember all the polio vaccinations and things? I know, you know, when I was a kid, I had two different kinds of polio vaccination, and, you know, some other, you know, like the magic shot that took care of three things, and I still managed to get every possible childhood disease anyway. But yeah, I mean, it was a real big thing, and I know at least for international travel, you know, they wouldn't let you go, or else they wouldn't let you back in or something, if you weren't, you didn't have the proper paperwork showing you were vaccinated.
Yeah, well, that's a form of medical tyranny and a complete invasion of our rights, especially our constitutional rights to privacy and bodily autonomy. And
well, I guess the argument is that if you're not vaccinated, that you could infect somebody.
But that's not even close to being true. I mean, the more people are vaccinated, the more sick they are.
There doesn't seem to be much evidence of it being true for this current one anyway. I don't know about, you know, 50 years ago or 60 years ago that I was referring to. But,
well, that brings up a point that I find a really very, very important issue for everybody in the world, really. It's not just the U.S., but everybody in the world, is your right to medical choice and your right to decide what you want to do medically with your body or not, or the Rockefeller system took over the medical establishment. You know, it hasn't been that long. You know, we're talking the turn of the century, you know, into the 1920s, you know, turn of the century, teens, 20s, it's in the 40s,
right.
It really started to ramp up, and it really built into what it is today, which is a big pharmaceutical empire based on profit and lies and bullshit. Rockefeller was a snake oil salesman, literally that word, I think. And they managed to take over the state of medicine in the U.S. And before that, it was, you know, it was holistic as it can be. And no, if the success rate was high, it would be different, but it hasn't. And it's been an abomination on humanity. And Now look what they're doing. You know, they're coercing and in some ways forcing people to take a vaccine that is experimental, isn't proven, is known to have been lethal in many people, and the ingredients are toxic and scary. And why would anybody want to put that in their bodies or force someone else to do so?
Yeah. Yeah. Or
coerce them. But I wonder what will happen with all of this, if these places will have to face, you know, legal challenges based on them discriminating against people. You're not allowed in if you're not vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
You can't come in. I mean, if I showed up somewhere, if you are, let's say you're a black male and you show up, you can't come in because you're black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not any different.
Yeah.
So, they're keeping us really controlled through the vaccination program and a lot of people are, the 5G that's rolling out and the chemtrails and all of it working together.
It's pretty weird. They're really controlling. Well, if you're going to get a poem in, you had better do it now.
Okay. How about, this is one coming in from my new book.
Great.
Totally shifting energies. Change of subject. Tangled webs. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when we roll out the mat for soul retrieval. Breathing deep, getting in there good, into past hurts, past lives, still living in thighs. Ouch. Just go, man. Just get out. Energies. Hitchhiking in my aura. Time to get clean. Time to sober up, bitch. Breathe deep in and out of lifetimes past and back to now again, new life again, born again, laying in a corpse. Ah, new breath, new life, time to go off the mat and hit the earth gently onto the freeways of lost souls and pills over stretches, stressed and addicted. Hungry ghosts hunting for bodies to haunt. But not for me. I'm heading home to the soul. Wound again. Not afraid of the dark. Not scared of the light or black. But sweat, sweat, sweat. Swear, swear, swear. It works. I promise. Just sing along with that voice. And those other voices too. With the other elms. Or just alone. Fear not. Just do it. Just blast out to the ethers. We're here. We're strong. And we're not going away until the earth takes us. Get used to us. Singing our proud songs and getting better and better all the time. Taking care of each other better. Taking care of ourselves better. And of course, taking care of our mother, the planet, and the earth. And the oxygen, the multiverse, and universes, inside and outside and beyond and above, even below, with and for the trees, the cats, and the birds. Better treat them better. Treat us better. All of us.
Very nice.
Thank you. That's one upcoming in my book and
yeah,
many, many more. And I've got a lot of new stuff that I'm working on and I have a chapter of the cat too, but I didn't have it with me. So But, you know, yeah. I'm glad I got a chance to read this one. And we had a little bit of a discussion.
Yes, and very nice. Yes. The book's going to be really good. So everybody, you should look for this magical moment. It's going to be really good. So, Ava, thank you so much for joining me and staying for this whole first half hour, or as much of it as we managed to do.
Yeah, sorry. If you have, if there's more time, I have another one I could read. Or do we have to? Is it you? It's going to break in about a couple seconds.
Yeah. Well, there's actually there's no station break at the bottom, but our next guest is expecting us right about now, so right. I should call him in and bring him in. You're welcome to stay on if you like. But, we'll see if there's a chance to read another poem.
Oh, yeah, no, that's okay. If you have the other guests coming in, I just thought, wow, that time went by really quick.
It did.
And I apologize about getting, you not being able to get a hold of me. And I'll share these next time. That's okay.
Yeah.
We'll save them for next time because there's plenty more. But,
all right.
Great joining you, Chuck. And I'll share a new chapter next month, and you have a wonderful rest of the summer out, you and everybody out there listening, Lorraine. Okay.
Don't you have a birthday pretty soon something like that? Seemed to me you're a Leo.
Well, I am a Leo, so we celebrate, the whole month long. In fact, we celebrate the whole year.
Celebrate
the whole year of being Leos.
Okay, well, happy being Leo then.
Thanks.
Okay. All right.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks so much. We're gonna add Philip Ferrugio in now. Philip joins me each week from Port Orange, Florida. And he's a very prolific writer. His columns are found all over the internet, and especially
the early bird.
Hey, there he is. All right.
The man with no teeth.
Philip Ferrugio with It's the Empire Stupid. Yeah.
I have to tell you, people listening, I had the worst experience. I had all my bottom teeth pulled out a week ago yesterday.
Oh.
And I had the top done a year and a half ago, and it wasn't that bad afterwards, a couple of days. But this has been a nightmare. The dentures that I had made for me fit okay, but they were rubbing on one spot, and it was very painful. And I had to go back to the surgeon, and she told me yesterday, do not wear the dentures for a week and come back and see me. And if it doesn't heal, if that little spot doesn't heal, I might have to do a bone graft.
Kidding. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm serious. And so I'm on a liquid diet. I've been on a liquid diet for 8 days. I'm on a liquid, soft diet, mashed potatoes. Oatmeal, shakes, pudding, I can't go over it. What's happening? But all I can tell you is when you're on a very liquid diet, you go to the bathroom a lot. like how about six times in one day? Okay, my friend.
Okay.
Anyway, here we go.
Okay.
The big squeeze. Okay. The big squeeze play. The big squeeze play. No, it's not about baseball. Though, as a youth, I participated in many squeeze plays. Sometimes they were actually suicide squeezes. So apropos to this current political climate. No, this is about millions of us working stiffs who consider ourselves socialist or socialist thinkers. Some in the sadly corrupt Democratic Party call themselves progressives, but they rarely go the full Monty and support viable socialist themes. Too many of them actually voted to increase the already obscene military spending under the false label of defense spending. Almost all of them got involved politically and publicly in supporting the neo-Nazi infiltrated Ukraine government. True socialists like this writer, if in office, would have decided to sit that war out while pushing for viable negotiations to end it. Russia was wrong in attacking Ukraine, and Ukraine was wrong in harassing ethnic Russians in the Donbass and Crimea regions. Oh, and Ukraine stuck its finger at Russia by lobbying for NATO membership. So both parties should not be supported in their actions or their war. Now, of course, the long list of Democratic Party missteps, mostly on purpose, voting against working stiffs is not so recent. It seems that the Dems have a sorry history of, when push comes to shove, in supporting the super-rich military-industrial complex. Just look at what has been transpiring in the area of residential housing, now actually worse than ever. The invasion of the absentee landlords is only growing as over a million, 100 million working stiff Americans are subjected to outright feudalism. Large blocks of corporate landlords own thousands and tens of thousands of rental property. And don't forget that great news talk celebrity Sean Hannity and the spoiled super rich kid and Trump son-in-law Jared Kushner. Most of this sad scenario came from the massive home evictions and foreclosures during the orchestrated subprime bubble of 2008-09. Now, you remember good old Henry Paulson, former CEO of the biggest Goldman Sachs, and then he was current Secretary of Treasury under Bush-Cheney cabal. Recall how he stood in front of the cameras, almost choking back the crocodile tears, and told the world, now we have to save our financial system from destruction. By the way, Paulson retired from Goldman Sachs with a compensation package. Are you sitting down, folks? $500 million. Henry then pushed for what was later known as TARP, a $700 billion bailout of his Wall Street cronies, when folks like Ralph Nader, joining with many fiscal conservatives, actually, demanded that these toxic firms be placed into receivership. That meant that Uncle Sam would pay for those septic Wall Street firms' assets at like 10 cents on the dollar and own them. That measure would allow the tens of thousands of employees to stay on their jobs earning their regular pay. Then when Obama took office, he made sure to satisfy his own corporate donors to continue this obscenity, subsidized by our federal tax dollars. Please go and watch the 2012 Mark Levin documentary entitled Lost on Long Island, to see how damaging those Wall Street layoffs were back then. Now we see the utter epitome of what Ralph Nader labeled Twiddledum and Twiddledee, the current two-party, one-party system. Lately, the right hand of this fist of empire has quickly transformed itself into an outright fascist menace, thanks to the snake oil salesman, former president. Behind the curtain that he stands in front of are a slew of borderline neo-Nazis, some very rich and many just plain old lower and middle class fools. This must be stopped before we wind up having an actual coup d'etat attempt that makes January 6th look like ants at a picnic, which will then ferment a real civil war. No kidding, folks. This is what the movers and shakers of the other hand of the fist of empire, the Democratic Party, are actually counting on, sadly. The Democrats really don't have to do much to help us working stiffs at all. They just play the oldest game of the lesser of two evils. Now, I don't know about you, but sometimes I cannot catch my breath. The squeeze is so tight. And I most likely will push that Democratic Party voting lever, to stop that approaching monster of the right wing. We working stiffs need to join together when the election cycles are over and formulate a new socialist mindset. Better late than never. Thank you.
Well, excellent column, Philip.
Thank you.
Done.
Unbelievable.
It just keeps on going. It's hard to know what to say, how to react.
Well, you know the landlord situation, right? I'm saying you've had experience with that.
I certainly do. I sure do.
Why don't you share with people any of your idea how you feel?
Yeah, I mean, our rent literally doubled from February to July.
Unbelievable.
Doubled, yeah.
And it's funny, Chuck. I was reading an article. New York City, they're having a big, rental revolution, they call it. Because here's what's happening there. Now listen to this. The average rent in Manhattan is now over $4,000 a month. An apartment. Yeah.
Yeah.
In Brooklyn, it's $3,300 in Brooklyn because Brooklyn has become gentrified in the last 10 years, and it's very expensive to live in Brooklyn. There are over 200,000. People in New York City that are under eviction right now. Okay, renters. Over 200,000 are under eviction procedures right now. Because the moratorium is over. And over 200,000 that have either been already notified that they're being evicted or they're going to be evicted. It's absolutely criminal. Okay, and that's why I've been writing about this for years.
Yeah, you have.
And it's like there is no moral reason why we should have absentee landlords. None. The community should own your building where you live. The community should own all the rental property and rent it out at a very fair price. Nonprofit, right? And the idea that I had, and I've written about it many times, is very simple. The community owns Chuck's building where he lives. They're charging him a certain rent, which is a lot lower than the private landlord is charging him now. But they take, it could be anywhere from 10-15% of his rent check every month. They put it over in escrow. They put it in escrow for Chuck, and when if he wants to, and he's ready, he could use that money towards a down payment to buy that apartment from the community. Because the community is not going to be in the business of being a landlord. They're going to do it as a civic responsibility. So their goal is to have as many people who are renting from them to own their own places. Okay? So think about how that could work. I mean, somebody pays, for argument's sake, it pays $1,000 a month. And $150 a month is put away by the community, who's now the landlord. They put it over in escrow. And if they want to make it earn, not going to earn a lot of money, but it can earn some interest, And maybe after 2 years, you decide you want to buy the apartment, and that money goes towards your down payment. So what's wrong with that?
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds great. The people that. I mean, there are a lot of people that would object because they're making money on it the way it is, and they don't want to change it.
I have my cat just jumped up. My cat just jumped up on my desk, and he's looking to. He's trying to love me, but I'm trying to do it.
All right.
Oh my goodness! Look at him. He's walking around. All of a sudden, he's laying down inside all night. Once I get on your show, he decides to come in here. Oh my God! He weighs 20 pounds, by the way.
Oh really?
I took him to the.
You better notice when he jumped on you, right? Yeah.
He's a big cat. He's very adorable. So anyway, Chuck. So what do you think about my plan, my idea for the get rid of absentee landlords?
I like the plan, but that you can certainly see why people who are really committed to this capitalist model are going to use the other word about this one. Yeah, so
communism? You mean it's communism?
Or socialism or something.
When they go to the post office or when they want the military to protect them or the local police to protect them, I guess then they don't mind socialism, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Or when they get a Social Security check.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they get Medicare. Oh, I'm telling you, Chuck, I've never seen it as bad as it is right now for us in this country. I mean.
Yeah, the separation between the haves and the have-nots is continuing to increase, and it's really bad. It seems like it's as bad as it was back, in the days when,
Age. And you know, what's really interesting when you said that, because that's so true, is you can't believe. Now, I am not a lover, as you know, politically of Joe Biden. I mean, he was one of my least favorite politicians forever. Okay. I thought he was a phony. I thought he was in the bed of a DuPont, an HSBC bank over in Delaware, because DuPont, runs the, that company runs Delaware. And I never thought much of the guy, but it's really interesting because now all the people that don't like him as president, the first thing they all bring up is, look at the inflation because of him. They're blaming Biden on the inflation. Don't they realize it's a cycle? It's a capitalist cycle, a boom and bust, and this is just the bust time now. Mm. And yet that's what they don't like about Biden. That's all you hear him say. Oh, the inflation and the gas prices. Oh, look under Biden, the gas prices are so high, and the inflation, and he's terrible. Oh, I can't stand them. Some guy today, one of my customers on the phone, nice guy, but he says, I can't. This president's the worst, man. We got to get rid of this guy. Mm. And I'm saying to myself, I agree with you on 100 different reasons, but not because of the inflation or the gas prices.
Exactly.
I don't like Biden for 100 other reasons. And obviously, the Republicans and Trump are even worse. And that's why I wrote the piece, because I feel a lot of my socialist friends, we feel like we're in the squeeze. And I said in the piece, Chuck, I will vote across the board Democrat in the next election or two. Mm-hmm. I have no choice. I don't want to see the other people, the right wing fascists, take power. I mean, look at this governor we have here in Florida, Chuck.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is like. This guy is unbelievable. This is like this is like a Woody Allen script. It's like a Woody Allen movie.
So speaking of the governor's race in Florida, what about the Democrats? Here we are. We're getting to, the main candidate seems to be a former governor who can't make up his mind if he's a Republican or a Democrat.
Wait, hold it. He's probably more in tune than anybody else because he realizes there is no difference.
Well, that may be.
Republican or Democrat. Yeah,
That's the only thing that makes me, you know, have any positive thoughts about him, actually. But
you know what? Let me say this. The way it is it's like in 2004, we used to say ABB, anybody but Bush. You know, it doesn't matter who is running against him, vote for the other guy or the other woman. Anybody but Bush, anybody but DeSantis, you know, anybody but Trump. I mean, these people, Chuck, I'm being serious. I mean, you know, I'm not a hardline Democrat. I'm a socialist. But this Republican Party is off the reservation. These people, they're really crazy. They really are. Yeah. And I hope it comes back to bite them. What happened in Kansas? Now you know what happened in Kansas, right?
Right. Yeah.
They voted down the amendment that the Republicans wanted to make it very harsh on getting an abortion. And the Republicans, women that voted Republican, they came out and they voted against that amendment. So that's a bellwether. Kansas is one of the most right-wing states in the whole country. And so I think it's going to, I really think, and I hope it does. I hope this bites the Republicans right in their asses. Okay. This whole thing with the abortion, you know, there's a guy running, where was he running? I forgot now. Is it Michigan or Arizona? He actually wants to ban contraceptives. He wants to make it against the law.
Wow.
Against the law to use a contraceptive or to buy or to get one. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine actually thinking that? I mean, this is crazy.
That is pretty crazy.
I mean, you know, really, is there hope for this country? Well, if you look at what's happening with the union movement, finally, you see how a lot of these businesses like Starbucks, Amazon, now it's Trader Joe's. How the workers are organizing unions for the first time, to be unionized. And the companies are doing everything they can to stop them. They're using all their money and their muscle. I mean, Trader Joe's, a woman who's been working there for a long time, she got fired because she was a leading activist in the union movement, and they found some reason to get rid of her. They're doing whatever they can at Starbucks to stop the unions. And I think also Apple, the people want to, and I'm glad. I hope the whole damn country, people start to form unions.
Yeah.
You know? And the reason why it's so good is because it's happening from the bottom, not from the top, where a lot of these big unions with these corrupt, you know, union officials, which is the biggest problem. It's coming from the bottom up. People are just organizing on their own. And I hope it continues, Chuck. I really do.
Yeah, I hope so, Chuck.
Yeah, because I don't know if the people listening to this understand, but when a worker does not have any protection through a union, they're in trouble. They're in real trouble because the boss can do whatever they want. And now, I'll give you an example right before we go. Okay, Trader Joe's had a history until the pandemic of being one of the best companies to work for. Their full-time employees were getting a 15% share into a pension, into a retirement account. Yeah, 15%. And they had a lot of good benefits and all that stuff. And what happened during the pandemic or after, they dropped it to 10%. Then they dropped it to 5%. And now any new hire isn't getting anything. And, of course, the part-time is getting nothing ever. You know, the part-time is no account. But that's what Trader Joe's has been doing in the last 2 years. They've gone 180 degrees, you know. So this is a really – and, you know, and the example that all these big chains use is, well, if we raise the salaries, then we're going to have to raise all the prices. Well, yeah, you're going to raise the prices because you don't want to cut your profits a little bit. And you don't want to cut the salaries of the executives who are making a fortune. Okay? So that's the truth. You know? Bob Bowman, before he passed away, late Bob Bowman, he ran for Congress as a Democrat. He was an ex-Vietnam Navy pilot, and he had a 180-degree change in his life, and he was against all these crazy phony wars and all that. When I interviewed him for running for Congress in 2006, we had lunch, and I asked him a question. I said, what's with the stock market? How does it work? He goes, Phil, it's very simple, very simple. When wages go up, the market goes down. When wages are down, the market goes up. That's all you got to know, Phil. You don't have to know anything else. Because the rich guys, that's all they care. That's why you see when you go into a bank, anywhere you go now, you ever notice how they're always short-staffed? They don't have enough staff. Yeah, they cut staff to cut their payroll. So we suffer. Okay, the customer, because you have to wait longer because they don't want to. Yeah. So anyway, it's just the way it is. You know, it's capitalism, and it's not what Adam Smith had in mind, Chuck. It's not. Okay. It's not. This is not. He was talking about a different world of small business and, you know, all that stuff. This is a corporate country, a corporate world, and any country, any major country you go to, doesn't matter where it is, industrialized nation, it's all the super rich. They're all pigs. They're all selfish. They're all greedy. And they try to screw their workers every chance that they get. So that's the name of the game. That's the squeeze.
That's the squeeze. All right. Well,
thank you, Chuck.
Don't get squeezed out. hope your teeth get start treating you a little bit better.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for being part of the show, and talk to you next time. All right.
Okay. Bye bye.
All right. And listeners, thank you for being here with me on the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It is a listener-supported station. They deserve your support. So make sure you head over to freedomslips.com and see what you can do to help out. I support them on Patreon. That's one of the many ways that you can contribute to this great network. They keep two streams of shows going pretty much 24/7. So, coming up after the station break, we will have Azura Crispino talking to us about some prison issues. Should be very interesting segment. We have Frank Cordero from the Des Moines Catholic Worker. Stick around. Talk to you on the other side of the station break.
Message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio, Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyphen, thank you. Welcome to the crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for free association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of whose program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back, everyone, to the New American Dream Radio Show. We are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Our next guest of the evening is Azura Crispino, Missouri joins me in this first week of each month. Going to bring her into the program right now.
Pretty funny.
Hello, Azura.
Hello, Chuck.
Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're live tonight. Okay.
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me. I'm actually going to be doing something different and interviewing my husband about some things that have been happening at his former facility. But before we get to that, just a gentle reminder that I'm with Prison Abolition Prisoner Support, or PEPS. We are a pen pal to incarcerated people organization, and we desperately need you to come and pen pal with us. So please reach out to us by email, iheartpaps@gmail.com, or on Twitter at iheartpaps, or you can, jump on our Zoom, which we'll be happy to share the link with you if you get a hold of us through one of those other means. So thank you so much for having me tonight, Chuck. I'm sure that coming in from Austin, everybody wants me to weigh in on the Alex Jones trial, but I'm not going to do that today, especially not on this show. But I did want to just give an opportunity for my husband, James Jalilia, to discuss with us a situation that occurred at his previous facility. So, hi, James. Welcome.
Hello there. How are you?
I don't know if you're to ask me. We've been together all day. yeah, so, I have my husband on for 15 seconds, and I'm already making fun of him. So, you got a call this Friday about a pretty serious situation. Do you mind telling us a little bit about it?
Sure. So I spent the last few years of my incarceration at Marion Correctional Institution. And while there, made some acquaintances, made some friends. And one of the, really, I made like three friends. And one of the three friends that I met called me Friday and said that one of the other friends hung himself while he was in segregation. So he was in the hole, and apparently he was able to hang himself and take his life. And that was very rough. A whole bunch of guys that I was, acquaintance with, they have sent me JPays ever since that happened, and they all, emails, and they all said the same thing, like, yo, this guy committed suicide, and I know you guys were really tight, so we wanted to let you know. And after that, the same guy who called me found out some more information and sent me an email. And it turns out that so what had happened was he went to a visit. He was in segregation. So he's in shackles and handcuffs, and he's wearing an orange jumpsuit or whatever. He goes to a visit with, family, we'll call it. And when he comes back from the visit, people said that he was crying when they saw him in the hallway going to segregation. And then while back in his cell, he kept screaming for the officers to let him talk to somebody from mental health. He really needs to talk to somebody from mental health. And they apparently told him that there is nobody from mental health working today. You're going to have to wait till tomorrow. And that's it. Nobody came and, none of the officers would even ask him, what's the issue? What do you need to talk about? And shortly thereafter, apparently an officer was making a round and looked in and saw him dangling. And my friend lost his life because somebody didn't want to do their job. Right. Okay. Ultimately, it was his decision to do it. But I feel like that decision could have been swayed in a different way if he would have just had people around him doing what they were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And it's been tough. I had his mother's phone number, in my notebook. Like I said, we were cool. He was a very good friend of mine. And I ended up calling his mom, well, texting her at first, and then we called, we spoke, we had a nice long conversation. I'm going to be calling his brother here this evening. Yeah, they had the viewing of the body. They're going to be having a funeral. It's just been a very difficult time.
It sure sounds it, yes. So, it doesn't appear that, you know, that somebody helped him along or anything. You feel that it was really the, that he did do it himself.
Yeah, that's what's coming out of the prison. You know, they're it's hard to say, right? Because people are telling me, and I know that these people are not in the hole right now. I know where they're at. But when something happens, and it doesn't matter where it's at, this is especially in a medium security facility, when something happens, the rumors just fly, right? Like,
I bet,
something
yeah.
might have happened 15 minutes ago, the entire prison knows about it, if it was big like this. So I haven't heard anything other than he hung himself. Right. Uh-huh. There hasn't been anybody saying, like, you know, nobody said anything about him having a cellie, right? A cellmate in there with him that could have done it.
Uh-huh.
Nobody said anything about, you know, anyone seeing like an officer take care of it. Nothing like
right.
that.
So
The fact that everybody's story is pretty much the same, that tells me, yeah, he committed suicide.
Yeah. Yeah.
So James, for our listeners who are not as familiar with prison conditions, let's say for the sake of argument that there was no mental health officer on the scene or available in that moment, what should have happened? Because you said that somebody didn't do their job. Can you tell us what their job is?
That's a good question. I said the phrase didn't do their job, and I can't really tell you if a corrections officer's job description entails this. But the way I see it, if I'm constantly telling you I need to speak to somebody in mental health, and your only answer is nobody from mental health is here today, you have to wait until tomorrow, I feel like your next sentence or question rather would be, can I help you with something? Like, do you need to talk to somebody? Like, I'm not, you know, a certified licensed counselor or anything, but if you need to talk to somebody about something, can I help you?
Yeah. And
from what I've been told, like, there was nothing about that. There was nothing like that ever happened. I don't know.
The question that I was trying to ask you is, what is the process when somebody indicates that they're intending self-harm?
Well, I don't know if he indicated self-harm, but if he did, right, if he said something along the lines of, look, I really need to talk to somebody or else I'm about to end it all, I don't know if that happened. But if it did, then they have what's called, what we call a suicide cell. I don't know what it's actually referred to as, but we call it a suicide cell. So if staff members feel that you are going to be a physical harm to yourself or even others, they have a tendency of putting you in this cell. So what it is, it's a cell in the hole, but there's no bunk bed. It's just one solid bed, and it's very uncomfortable, and it's right in the middle of the floor, and they take all of your clothes. You have no clothing. You have no linens. You have this one garment that kind of looks like a bulletproof vest or something. We call it a turtle suit. It'll keep you covered and sort of keep you warm. Same thing with this thick blanket that kind of resembles the same material. You can't use it to, like, there's no way you could harm yourself with these materials, but those are the only materials you get. And a officer will be posted right out front outside of your door and can look in through the door to see you at all times. A lot of times they use that cell as a punishment for people who are in the hole, because, you know, it's not every day when somebody's telling a guard that they want to kill themselves. So that cell can be empty a lot. And a lot of times if you're in the hole and you're causing trouble, the guards will use that as punishment towards you, right? Like, okay, you keep messing around, I'm going to put you in a suicide cell for a night.
Yeah, and it sounds like a punishment. I mean, it sounds like if you didn't want to commit suicide before, by the time they throw you in there, I've got to get out of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Wow.
But he obviously wasn't placed in there because there's no chance. I've been in there. There's no chance that anybody could kill themselves in the suicide zone. So,
wow.
I don't know. He didn't end up there.
Well, I'm certainly sorry for the death of your friend. And
it
does sound like somebody dropped the ball.
Yeah, I agree.
And part of it is, you know, we talk a lot about defund the police, right? Mm-hmm. We talk a lot about the cost of incarceration. You know, it costs about $80,000 a year to incarcerate somebody who's in solitary confinement or in administrative segregation. I think if you're in general population, it's like $40,000 or $50,000 to incarcerate you. So if you think about it, you have a facility that has over 2,000 men. And you don't have one mental health professional who is available. And it's hard to fathom that, especially at a time during COVID, where so many of us are attending telehealth appointments or attending psychologists through Zoom or through, you know, something that is HIPAA compliant, whatever. So it really blows my mind that the state of Ohio, which is one of, you know, the heavier incarcerators in the country, doesn't have a mental health officer on call that someone can talk to, even if it's done through, you know, a business group. Like, I understand that maybe you can't have a health officer or mental health professional, I should say, at every facility, though. No, I think there's also a question to all commercial offices, friends, to provide mental health services. But, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of people ask, I don't realize, that if you speak to a mental health professional in prison, you have no privacy. You'll know from the session until you get to a correctional officer, to a judge. You don't have that same level of privacy. And of HIPAA basically doesn't apply to you if you're a prisoner. So think about this for a second. You have a building that has a suicide cell, but there's nothing about that suicide cell that actually provides you with care in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, and people can be put on a suicide hold for 24, 48, 72 hours. So, you know, on one hand, we want to say they didn't do their job because they didn't intervene. But on the other hand, I think there's also a conversation to be had about how is it possible that this is the only feasible intervention in an environment where you are spending so much money to hold this person, you know? And I guess that it's not at all the same situation, but I'm an educator, and at some point, you know, there was a budget release that showed how much we spend on policing. And at every single campus, it's the case that we have far more police officers than we do counselors. Even though as an educator, I have never once referred a student to speak, once in my 15 years, I've referred a student to speak to a police officer. It was a student who had a restraining order taken out due to a domestic violence situation that was so awful that I don't even want to describe it on the air. And I did say to her, you know, if you're concerned about, now that he's made bail for him to come on campus, you could go and give the restraining order to the police. She ultimately decided not to. But the point is, I refer students to counseling multiple times a week. And yet in terms of our funding, we heavily fund policing, we heavily fund correctional officers, but even in a situation where people might need a mental health intervention, right? Because, I mean, I don't want to give a lot of the specific details of this gentleman. You know, I feel like it's my husband's place to do that if he wants to say his name or other identifying information. But what I will say is that he was in a situation where many of his appeals have been denied, and he was now facing a life sentence in a situation where he was unlikely to be granted parole, even though he was parole eligible. And so the point that I'm trying to get at is, for many of us, we have moments, right, where we struggle with, you know, just the difficulties of life. But for most of us, there's this thought of, well, things will get better. Except that if you're facing a life sentence and you're in solitary confinement, there is no things will get better, right? There is no, well, if I get a different job, or if I get a divorce, or when the kids move to college, or if I take an art class, right? None of that is available to you, and we know it. And yet we put people in an environment where if you ask for help, the best possible outcome is that you get basically put in a fishbowl where you're just going to freeze, and where everybody knows that the situation is so awful that it's used as punishment. Even though we're creating a situation where, I mean, if you didn't have a mental health problem going in, you're likely to have one coming out, right? Whether it's PTSD, whether it's anger issues, whether it's, you know, being bullied and targeted because of the nature of your crime, whatever the specific situation is. But the point is that this is not new or foreign or weird or different to the carceral situation. So to bring this into a larger context, there's been a conversation around the Bureau of Prisons. The Federal Bureau of Prisons has most likely just appointed a new big chief. I don't know what the exact title is, but not the warden, the director. And for a while, there was a concern that they were going to take the former director from Ohio, Gary Moore. They ultimately ended up taking the former director of Oregon. And so she's claiming that she is a reformer and that she's following the Norwegian model because she, quote unquote, decreased the number of people who were being held in solitary confinement. But it's unclear whether that really occurred, or if it did, if it was because due to COVID, everybody was on lockdown. So nobody was being listed as being officially in solitary anymore, because if everybody is, then nobody is, type of thing. Right. And part of this, I mention it because it's like, okay, everybody wants to claim that they're following the Norwegian model. And there's a part of me that wants to say, okay, why don't we actually import somebody from Norway? Like, if you're going to say that we're going to follow the Norwegian model and that we're really going to take incarceration as a an opportunity to re-educate people, and that we want to restructure things to follow the Norwegian model, then how about we stop sending wardens to Norway and we start bringing Norwegians in here and say, okay, here's carte blanche, go ahead and restructure. And of course, part of it is, that's not going to be successful, because the key of the Norwegian model is that you don't get life sentences in Norway. It doesn't matter how heinous your crime is. There's the expectation that at some point you will reenter into the rest of society, and that the purpose of your confinement is to ready you for when you come out of your timeout. It's not to just punish you to extract wealth from you, right? And I'm an abolitionist. I mean, I want to believe that even if I had been born in Norway, I would still be fighting against prisons there. Yet at the same time, I recognize that there is just such an incredible cruelty to all of this situation, you know, and we don't want to get too far into the details, but one of the things that really struck me as I'm supporting my partner going through this really difficult situation is that the mother of the person who passed was really not given any information and was basically told that the warden would not be available until the Monday in order to tell her what happened. And she had questions about the feasibility of the situation, you know, especially considering what happened with Epstein. And so many people were questioning whether he could have committed suicide or
right.
whether that was, you know, something that occurred that was a murder. And so she just had some basic questions for him about how could it have been done? Is it feasible? Or did something happen that they're trying to cover up? Now, granted, if she had spoken to a prison official, it's likely that she wouldn't have believed them, right?
Right.
But at the same time, there's something to be said for, okay, what do you mean? You don't have somebody who's going to sit and talk to you and answer your questions? And I know these people well enough to know that what they're probably concerned with is she going to sue us? And
right.
if they do give
exactly.
her information over the weekend, to what extent is that likely to show up in a lawsuit? And that's far more the concern, right, than giving a grieving mother answers. And,
right.
you know, I'm watching my husband and I'm so proud of him because he is being there for her in terms of giving her the answers, in terms of connecting her with people who are on the inside. Because, look, for your listeners who don't understand, like, you don't usually give the contact information for your family members to somebody else that you're locked up with. Like, if somebody gets in trouble, and I'm usually their emergency contact, it's pretty rare that it'll be an immediate thing for me to get notified, because normally they have to give my number to someone. So in order for you to have a strong enough rapport that you give an emergency contact, it's somebody that you've gotten to know really, really, really well. And it really speaks to the strength of their friendship that James was the only person that he had given a phone number to, because nobody else reached out to the mom, right? So I mention all of these details just to get people to understand, if you're a family member of somebody who's been incarcerated and the unthinkable happens to your brother, to your husband, to your son, to your daughter, to your sister, to your mom, to your loved one, you may not even be notified in a way that's remotely humane, even though you're dealing with loss. So not only do you not have a counselor on hand that is available 24/7 that can be sitting in an office, like, they don't even need to be at ODRC. There's no HIPAA violations to be considered. You can't contract somebody that you can hand a person a tablet and be like, here you go, here's a counselor.
Really?
And on top of
can't
that, you can't even manage to contract
yeah.
like a grief counselor to be the person who notifies when somebody dies. I mean, let's just say that he had died of COVID. Let's say that he had died of natural causes
yeah.
or a fight. I mean, people die in prison. You don't have a process of making sure that that's handled in a humane way. I mean, this is the first time that I'm dealing with this kind of situation in the 10 years that I've been doing support. But it's not the first time that Ohio prison system is dealing with it. But they're acting like they don't know what they're doing. Like, they don't have a script for that.
Yeah. Hmm. What a mess. Really.
Do you have any thoughts or questions or comments, Chuck?
Well, I'm pretty much at a loss to know where to go from there. It seems clear that they messed up in not having anybody any mental health people available. And based on your numbers, I could understand not having a mental health person if there's the population of the jail is 5, you might, but you would think you'd still, even then you'd think you'd still have somebody on call. I think there's no excuse for not having a doctor available for emergencies in this kind of a situation, in a place of that size. There's just no excuse for that. Did anybody really know that, I mean, did they have any clue how serious it was? Did they think he was just acting out? I'm sure that's what they'll say. But it might even be true. I don't know.
I don't have an answer as to if anybody thought that he might be acting out or if it was serious. I don't. Nobody said anything about.
But they should always err on the side of caution. I mean, they should.
Yeah.
No matter what somebody says, even if you don't believe them, you have to follow through. I mean, I would think that would be part of their job. And I mean, if nothing else, call somebody to come over. If there's nobody on duty, well, you know, there's somebody that needs help. Whoever's on call needs to come in.
I mean, and part of it is, remember that you can be double-celled in solitary confinement. That happens sometimes. But the point of solitary is that you are being isolated. So you have taken someone away from what could be their support system or at least other people that they can talk to get past this moment. Right. So if you're going to do that, like not only are you incarcerating somebody, but you're taking away their ability to communicate with other people. I mean, you can send kites through the hole or, you know, shout at people, but it's obviously going to be harder to have a conversation in that context than just being able to walk up to somebody. You know, obviously, if you're having that kind of struggle, you don't want to just talk to some random person who you can't even see through a vent. You want to talk to somebody that you trust, right? That knows your story, right. That you know is not going to use this information against you later. So the fact that, you know, they didn't call a chaplain.
Exactly. They should have a chaplain or a shrink or somebody. But you would, you know, if you are feeling that bad, you may not want anybody around. You know, I wonder whether the, in some cases, the being able to be isolated from everyone may be a plus for some people.
Sometimes. I understand where you're coming from with that. Occasionally, especially in a medium security, because when you live in a dorm, the dorm is open. There's 100 other guys just surrounding you at all times. So occasionally
like,
you need to get away. Yeah, you just want to get some solitude, and yeah, I get that. But I don't know if he wanted that solitude at that moment. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know where he was.
He probably did, based on what happened. But that must be one of the things that the guards have to come up with. You know, did what I done? I'm not trying to make excuses for the guards. I really think that they...
Okay, but let's put ourselves in their shoes, right? You see somebody who's consistently saying, hey, I'm having a rough time. I need to talk to somebody. And let's pretend for a moment that they didn't put him in the suicide cell because they know that the suicide cell is awful, not because it's more work for them. If they have somebody in a suicide cell, because that actually means that they're going to have to sit outside of the cell and look in on this person.
Uh-huh.
don't you think that one thing they could have done was to just say, hey, is there somebody in general population that if we put bring them over here to talk to you for a little bit might make you feel better?
Yeah, that would seem a reasonable response,
right? Like, yeah. I'm too lazy to talk to you, or I don't feel trained or whatever, but hey, can we phone a friend here? I mean, is there a friend inside the facility that you can talk to? And yet, for all the times that I have heard of people committing suicide in solitary, I have never, ever, ever, ever heard of a situation where a correctional officer has said, okay, you want to talk to somebody, there's not a professional available, is there someone who has that kind of relationship with you? Because let's put this in a larger context, right? Especially during COVID, it was the case that 12-step programs, if they were running, were being run by other incarcerated individuals, right? Mm. Most of the religious programming is being run on the inside, right? Because they've stopped volunteers from being able to come in because it's a COVID risk, right? And even though everything else has been lifted, very few volunteers have been allowed to restart going into a facility. So the point is, if you have, you know, whether it's a group like Temple Project or whatever, it's being run by your neighbors. It's being run by other incarcerated people. So why not say to somebody like, hey, okay, do you have a buddy? Like, is there somebody who's maybe like not in your block, but somewhere in this facility that you want to talk to? Because keep in mind, when you're in solitary, you're not allowed phone calls. So you can't call anybody on the outside. And that makes a certain amount of sense, but at least being able to say like, hey, is there somebody back here that we can bring to talk to you? Like, we're not going to, you know, let you do something that you're not supposed to do, but just that this person is going to sit on the outside of your cell, be given a stool, and you guys can just talk for like an hour or two, and then we're going to bring him back to his dorm. Mm. And if we can't, for some reason, have mental health professionals, then why on earth aren't we training incarcerated people to be peer counselors? Right? Uh-huh. Because getting back to this idea of, if we're actually thinking that some point day these folks are going to reenter, wouldn't it be good to be able to say to somebody, hey, we're going to give you some training to be a peer counselor so that when you go out into the world, you can be trained in nonviolent communication, or you can be trained in de-escalation, or you can be trained in this, or you can be trained in that. And you can say, well, I've had, you know, this real life experience of helping these folks. No, because that would mean that you're not spending money on the things that the 1% can make money off in incarceration. And I think, not to make this economic instead of personal, because it's a tragedy, but what blows my mind about it is that we spend so much money in incarceration, and the average person just doesn't think about how that money is allocated. Even if you believe that as much of our resources should be going to lock the bad people up, why do you think that the way that this is being functioned, that this is functioning, is appropriate? You know, I mean, this is a loss for the whole community. This is somebody who could have made a change in his life, have been redeemed, or even, let's say for the sake of argument, that he is such a danger to society that he should never leave the prison environment again. Like, let's grant that premise. Doesn't it make more sense to give this person the resources to be able to be a mentor to younger people who are coming into prison who will someday get out?
Mm.
Or are we supposed to believe that every single person who has ever been locked up is such a danger that they should never be released again?
Yeah. There certainly seem to be those who would like us to believe that. But and I suppose that's how we've ended up locking up more people in the other country and all that. But it just doesn't make sense to me. Well, thank you both, Azura and James. for being part of the show tonight. This was a very interesting segment, and I'm very sorry for the death of your friend, and I thank you for talking about it. I know it can't have been easy.
Well, I thank you for the platform. I appreciate it. Let other people hear about what's going on and talk about better ways to go about things, you know?
Exactly. Yes. Thank you.
And if
thank
there aren't so any listeners that are struggling with the content of this material, I would just like to remind everybody that there are national suicide hotlines that you can call. In many municipalities, there are even text lines that you can call. So, you know, if the nature of this conversation is personally disturbing to you and you need to talk to somebody, please reach out. And Chuck, if you can share those resources. And I, not to like beat a dead horse here, but part of the reason I'm mentioning that is because I understand that you're not allowed to make a phone call while you're in solitary confinement. But if you're going to put somebody in a suicide cell, can't you give them a phone that is only allowed to call a national suicide hotline?
Yeah, really.
Like, if for some reason
programmed to do it,
can't afford to have a counselor on call, why can't you at least afford a phone call to make it available for people to be able to reach out to the resources that would be available to us on the street? It's not going to cost ODRC any more money to allow somebody to call a national suicide hotline. And I will answer my own question, because you want to make sure that that environment is hermetically sealed. You want to make sure that people on the outside don't have a clue about what conditions are actually like in prison. Because God forbid that some young kid who's working at a national suicide hotline as a volunteer come to understand the realities of incarceration and say, oh my goodness, I'm getting all of these phone calls and they're all from people who are in solitary confinement. Maybe we should do something about this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you probably hit it right on the head there, Azura. Thank you. Thank you again. I really appreciate this segment, and it was very important. But I need to move on to the next one. Our final guest of the evening is Frank Cordero from the Des Moines Catholic Worker. I spoke with Frank earlier, and I'm going to play the conversation that we had right about now.
Jeff.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
Well, we're not doing all that good.
We just found out
that Eddie has the COVID. So,
oh no!
Like an hour we found that out ago, and now we're putting him in quarantine in the basement. And now I've got to everybody here. Everybody's got to take tests. That's what's got to go down and find out what's going on. And we're gonna, you know, that's just one more thing you got to ride out.
Right.
And Eddie's got to call into his vet. So we're doing what we're supposed to do, and the scuttlebutt, I think what I hear on this street is that, you know, lots of people are getting this thing. It just isn't affecting them as badly as it did in the early months and year. And most people, it's like a common cold. But that's not true for everybody. That is the point. So, So I don't know what that means for our community at the moment, but right now I'm, you know, I got these tests. Oh my God! I'm trying to make them work for me, and I flub it up every time. So I gotta have somebody else to help me do this damn thing. The trials and tribulations.
I wouldn't be much help with the test, because I've actually never had one.
Wow. Wow. You're lucky. yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I'm lucky.
So that's where we're up. That's kind of like you caught me. Like, I mean, this just happened this afternoon. So it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's a... So I have heard from Jess. That's good.
Last time I
missed a call of hers, so she's doing okay. And she's concerned about Julie, who's also trying to deal with the after effects of her bout with COVID, which is very challenging because she survived cancer, but her organs aren't good. She's got kidney respiratory issues.
Yes, and, it's much more serious for her. Yeah.
And she's got secondary things going on where she's now lined up to go to therapy, cardiothoracic therapy and mental therapy to regain some of the stuff that she lost in the COVID. So that's God bless her. She's got 5 weeks to do this because she wants to fly to Kurdistan, Iraq, and see Mohammed, her husband, who's got an appointment with one of the embassies, not in Kurdistan or not in Iraq, but one of those Middle East things with the U.S. To get his green card. So lots riding on this. So that's a bit high drama, I'd say, for us. And the we're doing the August 6th and 9th stuff, but. God, all we were planning to do, me and Eddie, were to go and do a vigil an hour on the 6th at 8 a.m. And then an hour on the 9th at 11 when the bomb was dropped. And just stand up and for an hour, hold a banner at where we've gone. I mean, of all the years we've done things, and this is the best we can do. And may not even be able to do that. So it's a... it's a continued grinding of the old man blues.
I don't get
to do anything like I used to do. And I'm trying to be trying to be humble. There's ways to look at, why am I here 45 years, what a wonderful witness, blah, blah, blah. But the truth might be, you had other things to do, Frank. You just didn't learn the lesson you were supposed to. So that's why God kept you here. It just you can't get the lesson down. There's no advancement. It's kind of a strange reincarnation thing. But the truth is, I think that I'd be spinning these yarns regardless of what I did with my life, because I think these kind of yarns and concerns and obsessions that I'm sharing with you is old people shit.
Could be.
I live with I meet young people, and God love them, and they're where they're at in their spiritual, moral development. We got some young people that are here come to the prayer with the old folks, and praying is different for me than it is for them, just because we've been through different things, and I really welcome the energy of youth. I miss that. So the struggle for me is to, don't be such a downer. Give us some goddamn hope.
Yeah.
All I got is dark humor and I laugh. I gotta be better than that. I know. I take things a lot more to heart these days. I do think that comes with, again, it's an old age thing, the whole thing about the Enneagram, figuring out your default personalities and working on them, is that in the second half of your life, the true human can compensate for the default personality reactions and embrace a multiple human reactions, I'm much more emotional now than I've ever been. I think that comes with the age too, but it also comes with, men don't supposed to show emotions, they say. So, but now that's much more easier to do. Yeah. Yeah. And the mystery of,
our faith in all this is the glue for me. I can't imagine not having the faith that gives me the courage and stupidity to live the way I live.
All right.
Go against the grain and then do it in a way in which you, self-aggrandizing yourself as little as possible, which I might add is a specifically difficult thing for an egocentric person to try to get out of themselves.
Yeah.
And it's a, I'm reminding my friend, David Costello, who died in March, really had a tough time with the pain and the cancer. Lived for maybe 5 months more than he was supposed to in hospice. Went to visit him every week. I know I told you about this. And one day in the pain, he's muddling and he's saying, he says, I just didn't think it mattered whether God existed or not. And, and then Chuck, his other friend, chimed in. We talked and trying to, and then I just kind of stopped in the conversation. I'm going like, well, hold it. If it doesn't matter whether God exists or not, then what does matter to you, David? And he said, gratitude. Gratitude.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for the life I've had. And then I said, hey, listen, let go of the God thing. Hold on to the gratitude. It'll get you into eternity. it's true. A human's disposition at the end of their life would be a gratitude. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
So
I sometimes run into people, Frank, who really literal about the no one can enter the kingdom of heaven except through me, spoken by Christ. And I have a big problem with that because there's so many people who have perfectly valid spiritual lives in other faiths, and I can't believe that they're all condemned to hell. So
this is my take on that. When I talk to a fellow Christian, especially a fellow Christian who's born in the USA, I say my position is Christianity as it is followed in this country is so off the mark. It is a scandal to project the power of the Lord Jesus Christ to people who don't know about him, while our own house is absolutely crucifying Jesus everywhere it can. That's what empires do. So, I think that's just a outrageous, terrible thing to say. It's not about a matter of what's true or not. It's a matter of who's asking it. And whoever is asking or raising those questions who live in this country and follow and are in a church, they're full of shit. And to be even asking that question is to continue to turn your back on the real challenge here is we have to rehabilitate Jesus with Christians. We don't have to help other people understand how central Jesus could be to their lives. We're an abomination because we don't practice it. I mean, I don't know where else to go with that. I mean, it's like you don't have to change one dogma. In my world, you just have to practice what's said in the book, whether there's a Trinity or not. And on the door of death, be grateful. Man, that's good. Yeah, because I know this guy. He worked with the poor. Yeah, and his second wife told him second half life mantra that he carried with him. And it's good advice to him, and it's good advice to me. And she would say to him, David, the other thing is, it's not about you. Once I stop living about me and live for others.
Yeah.
Then that's where the fight is.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a hard time getting myself out of the picture, and maybe that's why I'm here 45 years. Still got something to learn.
Yeah. Some of it just never give up.
Yeah.
Well, Frank, thank you so much. Another very interesting talk, and burying of souls or whatever.
Yes. Everybody, get that. I hope I have good news on the virus for you next week.
I hope so.
All right.
Thanks. My love and prayers are with all of you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Bye bye.
You betcha. Bye bye. All right. Well, thanks to all of the guests on the program tonight. Ava Bird, Philip Ferruccio, Azura Crispino, James Lauderdale, and Frank Cordero. And especially my thanks go out to you, the listeners. You're the most important part of this show. I hope you'll be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I am Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show. And as I often do, when there's a little bit of time left before the end, I'm going to kind of take us out with a song. So when I was speaking with Philip earlier, talking about unions and the vast gap between the rich and the poor, it occurred to me that I should sing something by Woody Guthrie, and decided to go with probably his best known song. This land is your land, this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. As I went walking, I saw a sign there. And on the sign it said, no trespassing. But on the other side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me. In the shadow of the steeple, I saw my people. By the relief office, I seen my people. As they stood there hungry, I stood there asking, is this land made for you and me? Nobody living can ever stop me as I go walking that freedom highway. Nobody living could ever make me turn back. This land was made for you.
Revolution Radio. join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
And no, of course, others may hate.